Hello, my name is Farida Khawaja and I am a Senior Policy Manager at HFMA. Today I am joined by Gerald Anuezi from Barts Health NHS Trust. And Gerald will be talking to us today about their shortlisted entry for the HFMA 2022 Costing Award. And this award recognised the importance of costing within the organisation or system, and also looked at the effect that costing has had on the organisation and in particular on the patient or service user experience. It also covered areas of innovation in how costing information is produced or used, and in particular looking at the level of partnership between finance and non-finance staff in the development and use of robust costing information. Hi Gerald.
Good morning. How are you?
Yes, very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm good.
Excellent. You guys were shortlisted for the HFMA 2022 awards for costing. So it'd be really interesting just to hear about the approach and how you've gone about trying to get this back on the list of priorities. Obviously, we've been dealing with a pandemic and a number of things have been deprioritized. So if you could just tell us a little bit about how you went about getting the clinical engagement.
Sure. So I came back, I went on secondment for 2 years, almost 2 years away from Bath. So I was working at Buckinghamshire. And so when I came back from my secondment, we had no costing system or a costing team per se in place. And so in effect that we had to start from scratch. And one of the things that our CFO wanted was he did not want a box standard costing system per se, with your costing reports, which was basically more finance focused. He wanted a bit of more story to it. So from speaking to, and I've worked with clinicians in the past, and one of our clinicians was someone called Professor Finbar, and I did some work with him with our demand management, and demand management was to do with looking at imaging and pathology data and usage. And as such, when I said speaking to him, and also one of our directors, our director of improvement, Dr. Chris Gordon, they wanted things to do with more population health in there. Aligned to the fact that I'm actually doing a doctorate in looking at the move from population from PBR to ICS through population health. So basically, all this came into the fore, into the design of our costing system moving forward. So in effect, that's what we wanted, what the whole intention was, and which we finally did, was to look at not only costing data, but the effect on the population as well. So to give us more of a story moving forward.
Yeah, no, that's great. So what would you say was the critical success factors to try and to ensure that you got the clinical engagement?
I was lucky that I had Professor Finbar in there. So through Professor Finbar, the first thing we did, actually, before we even got to that stage, was we wrote a 5-year costing strategy plan, which was basically from covering the years of 2021 to 2026. And our journey towards our 2026 to become the best in class. And because I worked with Professor Finbar in the past, I was able to approach him as well. And he acted as a kind of a clinical guide for us to get all these other colleagues on board. Because I think one of the things is that once you have a clinician on board and they guide you through the whole process of what the clinicians want to see, it is then easier to sell to other clinicians rather than if we did it within the finance department on its own. Because obviously in that way you don't have the clinical engagement, but once you've got one clinician on board, which it's easier then for him to then speak to other clinical colleagues. It becomes less of a finance-led project than a more, what's the word, collaborative approach between finance and your clinicians.
Right, okay. So it sounds like there's a lot more buy-in and ownership if it's not seen as just a finance-led initiative. Excellent. One of the other observations I had was from the Value Masterclass that was run, and sometimes people can find the sheer volume of data a bit off-putting. And I just wondered, from your experience, how did that work with the clinicians that you were engaging with, and how can we sort of direct finance and non-finance stuff to try and get the most out of the data that's out there?
Yeah, so in our case, I think the key to it was creating, and that's where the clinicians came in, is we created a dashboard that It's easy and pleasing on the eye. We did the dashboard with our clinician support. So they were looking at the data and looking at the dashboard to make sure that whatever is shown on the dashboard, actually, it gives you a story, the headlines, and it makes it easier to actually play with the data. So what we've done is we've created a blog, a user guide as well, and we've done training sessions. And so it's easy to play with on the ClickSense platform. You could actually look at it from an inpatient perspective or an outpatient perspective or critical care perspective. So people could actually start playing with the headline shows, all our sites, the number of SCEs, the average cost per SCE, and the medical fee to be discharged, the average distance that people travel, and the population data. And on the other side, which is the dimensions, people could actually look at it from a service line perspective, people could look at it from a treatment function code perspective, or we could look at it from a pod or admission method. We could look at it from an ethnicity perspective or a deprivation decile, which is basically one is the most deprived and 10 is the most affluent. It's quite easy to navigate through this, and it gives them a story of what is going on. So people might just want to look at a specific diagnosis, or people could want to look at a specific procedure or HRG. So they could actually go in and type it in and go, well, for this procedure, what is the story regarding this procedure? So they could click on that procedure, and you look at it from an age perspective, or you can look at it from a gender, or you can look at it from an ethnicity perspective and look at whether a white British or Asian or Asian Bangladeshi or whichever ethnicity category that you're looking at. So it's quite easy to navigate. And as I said, we've done a lot of training sessions on this. We've trained and we've done a lot of presentations to our clinical networks, our clinicians, our executive board, our non-executive directors, and our finance colleagues as well.
Excellent. Sounds like it's been an iterative process, and that you've had that constant feedback loop to make sure that the dashboards are fit for purpose and that they give you the information that's the most helpful for the end user, which is great. One of the things that you touched on, Gerald, was about some of the deprivation. So obviously there's a big focus on health inequalities, which is one of the key objectives of the long-term plan. And it sounds like you're already capturing some of that deprivation data. Is that something that you added recently, or was that there at the beginning? And how do you plan on using that going forward in terms of supporting the agenda to try and reduce health inequalities?
So the whole when we started designing this system from the beginning, and when we're talking about population, it came from Chris Gordon, and I always give him credit for this, is that we, from the beginning, we were fully aware that it was one of the big agenda items. And so we brought it in from the beginning, which is to link our data to the ONS data on population from using the 2021 census, plus the data published by the Ministry of Housing and Communities, which is on the LSOA. And so we brought it in from the beginning, because obviously, as I said, our Chief Financial Officer did not want just a box standard finance report per se. Because if you look at most SLR data in the past, or is mostly to do with this service not making a profit, this service is making a loss, but they want the population statistics brought in. So we brought it in from the very beginning. And as I said, it was also part of the doctorate I'm actually writing on the move from PBR to population health funding, grant ICS. So that was, for me, was one of the most important factors in there. One thing I also need to mention is that from the beginning, we set up something called a costing steering committee. And our costing steering committee was first of all chaired by Dr. Malik Ramadan, but now is actually chaired by Professor Finbar. So we've got clinicians on board in our costing steering committee. We've got our finance people, and we've got one or two operational people, plus our people from our information teams in there. So everything we've done is kind of taking into account the views of the costing steering committee and also the views of our users. We did a lot of consultation in terms of the what do people want to see and how they want to structure it. So in terms of how we intend to use it, moving forward now, we're working with our clinical improvement team. It is their job now to use this data and our operational teams to start using this data in terms of the planning, all the planning work that they need to do in the future. I think it's for our kind of our operational teams to start using this data, and our clinical improvement teams to start using this data now to have this the design services.
Thanks, Gerald. So that must be a really interesting piece of work, you know, looking back to the old payment by results and how that's changed, because that was then almost superseded by the aligned incentive contract. When are you hoping to conclude that piece of work, and what has been interesting for you doing that?
If my professors allow me to finish, I mean, I should finish writing my doctorate by the end of this month, if my professors don't ask for more changes, actually. Actually, doing a doctorate has been fun, but it's also been stressful, actually working full-time and doing a doctorate. And I suppose, I think the key to it is that health is a very complex topic. And everything to do with healthcare is very, very complex. And I think one of the things that I'll say to people is, when people talk about deprivation and health inequalities and all that stuff, I suppose we always miss the point is that the key to it is you cannot divorce age from race. Age and race go hand in hand. So we shouldn't take it as a given that things are as straightforward or as easy as they first appear to be. We need to also look at things like, when we talk about deprivation, we need to look at things like issue about transport, people's employment status or lack of it, people's health, education and culture. And this whole dashboard actually shown us how complex healthcare is. And so it's not as simple as or as straightforward as we originally thought, or even for someone like me that works in healthcare, was as easy as or as straightforward as I initially thought.
Thanks, Gerald. So could you just tell us a little bit more about how you've used the costing information and the impact it's had on your organisation, particularly maybe in terms of patient or service user outcomes and experience?
Because this dashboard has been, it's been 18 months. We've only built it in the last 18 months. But one of the things that we've done over the last 6-7 months is to do a deep dive report into our HVLC services, so which is the high volume, low complexity. And one of the things that is frequently mentioned where we've used this is to look at some of our services of looking at, for example, ENT, why they have late starts and early finishes. And one of the things that has come out from that is a lot of the reasons why they had the late starts and early finishes was to do with the fact that they were doing lateral flow tests in theatres. Working with the clinical improvement team, they've actually they've moved the lateral flow test to the wards, so before the patient gets called down. So hopefully moving forward, that should actually reduce the incidence of late starts and early finishes, as because obviously now once you do the lateral flow test, you don't have people hanging around. So by the time the patient comes in, the lateral flow test has been done. So basically the TX staff will get on with actually operating on the patients, which clinical improvement teams are now very keen on, is looking at the issue about DNAs and patient cancellations and understanding where in the population or which areas or which groups of people are most likely to DNA or cancel or patient cancellations, and start using this data to make improvement in that respect. Included in our dashboard is a map of the UK, and we can actually see which area of our service or which areas or group of which areas where people are most likely to DNA. And so basically that area is where people need to start targeting. Or we could actually look at it from an age perspective, or we could look at it from a race, ethnicity and age perspective as well. So if you pick the 20 to 29s, for example, then we could look at it from that age group, and we look at it from an ethnicity perspective. So you could see the prevalence, and then we could actually look at this group of people on the map of the UK.
Excellent. It sounds like you're using this tool, and in particular the dashboard, to then have further deep dives and investigate into why certain cohorts of patients are DNAing, and then hopefully try and address that, especially in the current climate with a huge backlog. The last thing we need is the DNA rates to go up when, you know, it's sort of fighting a war on both fronts then, isn't it? Can you tell me what you've learned about the process you've been through in terms of the dashboard, the clinical engagement, and how do you think this supports the wider efficiency agenda? I don't mean just sort of tangible cost savings. You know, we're operating in an environment where for 23-24, the efficiency target is 2.2%. So do you think there'll be more of a focus on how costing functions and costing teams can support the organisational agenda to try and, you know, be more efficient?
I suppose one thing I've learned is we cannot have change without clinical engagement. I think the clinicians are key to anything we do. And I think having clinical engagement and having insights having discussions with clinicians is actually key to us meeting our efficiency targets or whatever we're going to call it moving forward. Because I think for us is you cannot divorce. I think when people talk about efficiency savings and the works, having clinicians as part of that conversation is a very good start and a very good way to actually start seeing what we can do. And I think one of the other things that I've learned from this whole system and that we've built is that there are things that are beyond anyone's part health. From what we've seen so far, there are things that are beyond our control. For example, if you look at our medically fit to be discharged, there are lots of people that are sitting in a hospital today because of social care issues. So in effect, is that if they don't have any bed, if they have anywhere to go to as a result of social care, then you're stuck in our beds as well. So that is another issue that needs to be tackled. So when we're talking about efficiencies, we need to look at the broader context of it and expand it out there, which is basically what is causing us to be inefficient. Is it something that is within our control or are the factors that are beyond our control? For example, social care. So if you look at our inpatient data, for example, you can see that the medically fit to be discharged is quite high, and you can see the cost of these people staying in the bed longer than they can. And we could look at it from a site perspective, so each of our different sites, of how much the medically fit to be discharged is costing the organisation. Sorry, there are myriad of reasons why these people are staying in the bed. And I think if you look at it from an age perspective as well, you can see a lot of these patients are over the age of 50 or 50 and above. And so that points to issues with social care as well. So obviously that doesn't help with our efficiency targets if you've got all these people that are medically fit to be discharged, but they're still staying in the bed. So there is a wider issue and a wider context of, if we move these people on quicker, then obviously that would help with looking at things like the backlog, which you've mentioned as well.
Thanks, Cheryl. So as we're operating in the world of ICSs, it's more important than ever with the collaborative working and perhaps bringing in some of our social care partners and sharing some of this data with them as well, so that we can then address the issues collectively going forward. The other question I had for you, Gerald, was just in terms of the future of costing and what are your aspirations for Bark and what you want to be able to do within the costing team in the short term and long term?
For us, I think it's to improve, to carry on work with our clinical improvement teams to look at where costing can assist, and also helping our operational teams as well. Because I think for us, is one thing I've always said is that costing is one of the, it's in a very unique position that we play with the data more than anyone else. So we've got insights to cost of a service, the operational data, and as well as income. So we could actually look at it from three different perspectives. And I think the key to it is working with operational teams and ensuring that, for us personally, that we design reports and dashboards that are meaningful for them, and it becomes part of the everyday process from both a clinical and an operational perspective. And whatever insights we can help with, then that can only be a good thing. And if people say, "Oh, costings helped us achieve this efficiency savings," and then has helped us improve patient outcome or patient experience, then that can only be a good thing. And I think that is, for me, that is going to be the key moving forward, is basically costing supporting our operational and clinical teams in making whatever improvements they can. And also, actually, we shouldn't forget our finance teams as well, where they can, if they see a service that's not making a profit, or making a contribution is what insights we can provide to them to help them improve the financial position.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Gerald. That's been really interesting. And thank you for your time and sharing your journey with us today. Thank you very much. My name's Farida Khwaja, and thank you to Gerald Enuezi from Barts Healthcare, who's been talking to us today about how costing can support the efficiency agenda.